Good morning. It is time to get up with the return of sports. It's in the air, starting with baseball. Plans are in place. How close are they? We've got the answers. Then, Big Ben. The sight of his face is actually much more important than you realize. It could mean big things for the Steelers. We're all over it. And LeBron speaks. And wow, does he have a lot to say about Michael, about the season, and so much more. You'll hear it as we get up with you, starting right now, jam-packed on a Tuesday, and delighted that you have chosen to get up with us. I'm Greeny. We are in Bristol, and there is a hint, maybe more than a hint, of optimism in the air about the return of sports on a variety of fronts, and we have them all covered for you in just a moment. But let's start with Get Up and Go, and it begins with a visit at the White House yesterday. Rockets team owner Tillman Fertitta said he believes the NBA will find a way to finish the 2020 season. He was there as part of a roundtable with restaurant executives, but again, it was an optimistic tone. To hockey, where the NHL has narrowed down its list to 8 or 9 sites if the league resumes play this summer. The NHL is working on a plan to host a dozen or so teams at select bubble sites and play multiple games per day. So they're talking about coming back. And then there's this. The governors of New York and California and Texas all announced yesterday that professional sports could resume in their states without fans in the near future. So they joined Florida and Arizona, who have recently opened their states for professional sports. And this is significant. Those three states are the most populated ones in America. So no surprise, a lot of teams could be affected. Among the four major sports leagues in America, as you see, 27% reside in those three states. You're talking Yankees, Cowboys, Lakers, and a whole lot more. So what does all of this mean? Let's start with baseball and bring in our Jeff Passan here. Jeff, what impact do you think these statements from these governors have on baseball's ability to move forward?
Well, Greeny, it certainly doesn't hurt baseball's efforts, but we also have to understand this is a multifaceted process. And as much as governors want to think that they've got the power to bring sports back in their state, it's going to be going through a couple different levels before we get those teams back. Remember, you've got local officials as well, like mayors and like city councils and all sorts of different politicians who can stymie those types of efforts. But even more, it's the local health officials, Greeny, who are going to be the ones to rubber stamp these sports coming back. They're going to look at the plans and the protocols that these leagues have in place and say, we believe that you are going to be safe for yourself and for the public, or we believe you are going to be a hazard and we're not going to allow you to play.
All right. Now, on baseball's side, they released a lengthy memo. It was some 67 pages about safety procedures and plans. I'm not expecting most of our fans to read all of it. So what are the most important things?
There's a lot in there, Greeny. And what it really comes down to is as much what you're not allowed to do as what you are. And this shows the lengths to which baseball is going to try and be thorough and get on the sides of those health commissions that are going to look at this document and say, okay, you're outlawing spitting, hot tubs, cold tubs, Gatorade jugs on the bench. Players aren't allowed to stand next to each other during the national anthem. You're suggesting maybe you guys don't even take showers post-game? Like, there's a lot in there. And listen, I think the shower stuff's going to go away. Players didn't take too kindly to that. But you need a document like this to start. And it was just a draft memo that they're getting feedback from Major League Baseball teams as well as the Players Association on. There's going to be some progress this week on in this regard with health and safety. And I think that they can come to an agreement there. In the end, though, Greeny, it's going to come down to money with the players in Major League Baseball. And they are still at an impasse there at this point. Listen, they've got a couple of weeks, and once those couple of weeks are over, either they're going to be starting spring training in mid-June or they're going to be back at the drawing board, and that's a place where nobody wants to be right now.
I got you. So again, just to sort of wrap this up here in just a few seconds, the timetable is really rapidly approaching us, right? If they want to start spring training sometime in June, we're already getting to be in late May. How quickly do they need to move forward in an agreement here?
Yeah, this deal needs to be done with May still on the date. Like that, it's as simple as that. If you don't have that, then you will not have baseball in early July starting off actual regular season games. You will not have spring training. There's so much logistically, Greeny, that needs to get done that this 67-page plan outlines. And whether it's physicians, whether it's teams, whether it's players, you need to have everything running as smoothly as possible if you want to hit those timetables.
All right, if that happened in May, then we're talking about less than 2 weeks. Today is the 19th. We'll see where it winds up. Jeff, awesome. Thank you very much. Let me turn my attention now to football, because there's huge news there. NFL teams can begin reopening their facilities today, provided state and local governments allow. The commissioner sent a memo to all 32 teams over the weekend, allowing what they're calling soft openings 2 months after all team buildings were closed due to the pandemic. And we have Diana Russini with us this morning as our insider. Diana, good morning. NFL camps start to open. What does that actually mean for all the teams?
Yeah, Greeny, this is really phase one. I wish I could have awesome news that says that the players and the coaches are all back in the building, but that is not the case. This is the softest of openings. I talked with teams that are opening the facilities like the Steelers, the Cardinals, and they're approaching this very, very lightly. We're talking salespeople, some communication directors, some cleaning service crews that are getting back in the building. And they all have to be on point with the state, local, and the NFL rules. So those people that are entering those facilities, they'll have their temperature taken. They'll have to wear a mask and, of course, social distancing. So really the big question right now is, when are the coaches and players going to be allowed back in? And right now, the league and the union reps are still trying to come up with a plan. But for right now, the only optimism now is you have strength coaches back in the building. It's going to be another, we'll say, few weeks here before we'll even know if players and coaches are going to be allowed in the building.
All right, so let's focus in on that again. A few weeks till we'll know if they're coming back. Are they anticipating having anything organized before training camps would be set to begin?
So as of right now, it's all just virtual. And the conversations being had with all the different organizations is what is going to be the smartest and also equal competitively. I know I spoke to some organizations on the West Coast. They had some ideas about maybe getting the coaches together, social distancing, whether that means in like a conference room or, you know, meet at a hotel like we heard before the draft. If you remember, the Saints were going to meet at that brewery in New Orleans. But as of right now, the league isn't allowing that. You should know soon, and perhaps maybe they'll tamper with that or at least make some adjustments to that come June to maybe give those coaches those opportunities. But as of right now, everything is virtual.
All right, Diana, stay close by. We have a lot more to do with you as the morning continues. Bunch of other LFL news. But let me get to the NBA, because the Rockets and the Pelicans and the Clippers have now joined 14 other teams in opening up their practice facilities for individual workouts. And then we get to the main event, because last night on the Uninterrupted YouTube channel, LeBron James spoke about restarting the season.
No, definitely not giving up on the season. Not only, myself and my teammates, the Lakers organization, we want to play. It's a lot of players that I know personally that want to play. You know, as a fan myself, I know we all miss it. And I would be sitting here lying if I said we don't. We all miss the game of basketball, man. It's done so much for all. You're seeing it right now with The Last Dance. You're seeing it. It's firsthand of how the game of basketball just assembles everybody. So hopefully this 2020 season can continue sooner than later.
All right, so that's LeBron striking at least a hopeful tone. Here's Brian Windhorst and Wendy. We have a lot to do with you this morning. Let's start with this. What sentiment are you hearing from players and officials around the league about the possibility of a return?
Exactly what LeBron just said. Everybody would like to make it happen, but there's still a little bit of a trepidation about how fast it's going to happen and what the path is going to be. Greeny, the NBA has been conservative throughout this entire process. They pretty much sat on the sidelines throughout April. When they got to May, they weren't even allowing anybody to get testing on their teams unless they were symptomatic. They have just begun to sort of wade into the water, getting facilities back open. And in talking to people at the league office and other people in the league, they want to watch what happens in this country over the next 2 weeks, whether the states that have opened see good numbers, whether the states that haven't opened will open. We just had a big announcement from the governor of California and the governor of New York in the last couple of days about pro sports. If that continues to progress, I think by early to mid-June, you will see the NBA try to move forward and try to get a schedule together.
Yeah, we had New York, California, Texas, all of those suggesting that they can reopen for professional sports. How significant is that? What specifically does that mean to the NBA?
Well, first off, they've got teams in all of those states, so they need to have the support to actually get back to doing some sort of work there. Secondly, they may host games in some of these places. Florida coming out, their governor being first and announcing they were open to pro sports, it is not a coincidence that Orlando has been mentioned as a possible place that the NBA could look at, you know, creating a little bit of a quarantine zone. So they have to have the support of the health officials and the government before they even negotiate an agreement with their players. That's what's so difficult about all this, Greeny, is that they're not just battling the virus. That's their number one focus. But there's so many other layers they have to work through, which is why the calendar gets complicated pretty quickly.
Yeah. And so just to sort of put a ribbon on all of this here, give me a timetable again. Like you said, 2 weeks before they start really making hard, fast decisions.
The working order right now in the league, and I'm just going to qualify it by saying, look, this has been always been a moving target, is that by early to mid-June, they will have a decision. We're either going to go or we're not. And if we are going to go, here's what a schedule might look like. I would say right now, we're moving positively in that direction. But the NBA, again, keeping a close eye on those numbers every single day from Nate Silver and others, just like the rest of us.
All right. All I wrote down from that was moving positively in that direction. I will take it. I will take any ray of optimism that I can get. Stay close, Wendy, because I have a lot more to do with you, because LeBron had a lot more to say. We are just getting started this morning on Get Up. As we continue, sneaky big news. Ben Roethlisberger has a new haircut, and he shaved off his beard. And that is much more important than you think it is, and you'll hear why coming up next. Ben, we've talked about LeBron versus MJ. How about LeBron with MJ? The King weighs in on playing with Michael, and this is fascinating. All that and more on the way in this hour. But first, a little sneaky hembo time, and this one's going to be for Orlovsky, who will join us in just a moment. Which NFL franchise has produced the most MVP quarterbacks? That's the question. The answer is next. We're just getting rolling. Get Up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Wingstop. Order now at Wingstop.com, where flavor gets its wings. And as we bring Dan Orlovsky into the conversation this morning, here's a little trivia for you. Hembo's ready for you this morning, Dan. Here we go. Which NFL franchise has produced the most MVP quarterbacks?
Greeny, Hembo's so busy getting himself ready for beach season. He's trying to get, you know, looking good in his swimsuit. He wants me to say the 49ers and he wants me to say the Packers, but the answer is the Colts, with Peyton Manning and Bart Starr winning a bunch of them.
He's exactly right. He got it right, even though the thinking wasn't exactly right, because it's not the most number of MVP awards. It's just the largest number of quarterbacks to win it. But it is the Colts, with Johnny Unitas, Earl Morrill, Burt Jones, and Peyton Manning. Winning MVP. Well done, Dan Orlovsky. Let's see if Philip Rivers winds up being added to that list. Unlikely, but I guess you never know. He agreed to a one-year contract with the Colts in March. He's 38 years old. He already has a job as a high school coach lined up for when he retires. But his current head coach, Frank Reich, believes Rivers has more than 1 year left in him.
It's the NFL. You know, we know he's got to prove it. We got to prove it as a team that he, you know, to keep him wanting to play. So I can just tell you from the previous relationship, I really believe it's Phillip's intent to play multiple years. I personally believe he is more than capable of multiple years. But as far as how the actual contract gets out, gets worked out, you know, that is it's the NFL. So we keep things realistic there. But I'm very optimistic it'll be a multi-year thing.
All right. I like the sound of that. Dan is with us, and Lewis Riddick joins us this morning as well. But, Dan, you earned the first comment by getting the question right. Do you believe, from based on what you saw, particularly last year, that Phillip Rivers has multiple years left in the tank?
I do, Greeny, and he's got plenty of good winning football left. And now the main reason is because of where he went, and that's the Colts. We have to remind everyone that Phillip Rivers is 1 year removed, one season removed from quarterbacking 12-4 football team, throwing for 4,300 yards and 32 touchdowns. Now, what happened last year, what fell apart last year for the Chargers, was Russell Okung goes out. And then that tackle duo for the Chargers became the second worst tackle duo in the NFL when it comes to giving up pressure. He was just under so much pressure. Now he goes to Indianapolis, which has a top three offensive line in the NFL. He's not going to be under that pressure. So can he still throw with great timing and anticipation and touch and layering the football up and over defenders? Plenty of arm strength left. Has he seen everything that he'll possibly see from a defense? Absolutely. Now, I would say a big part of what he does this year and in the future in Indy comes down to what Michael Pittman Jr. becomes as a wide receiver, their second round pick out of USC from last year. Because if he becomes a Cortland Sutton or an A.J. Brown or a Juju Smith-Schuster type of player, well, then Phillip Rivers has a great offensive line, a very good receiver in T.Y. Hilton, and then an up-and-coming, promising young player that he has in Michael Pittman Jr. So if those pieces kind of come together, the Colts have a very good quarterback for the next two or three years in Phillip Rivers.
Lewis, I'd love to hear your perspective both on what Rivers can bring, and if he is what Dan is suggesting he might be, Colts have the makings of a pretty good team in a division that might not be that good. How good could the Colts be in the AFC this year?
Well, I think overall, look, how good can the Colts be? Like, I thought their draft, you know, led by general manager Chris Ballard, was one of the best in the NFL, if not the best in the NFL, because I think they, without a doubt, got the people that they wanted at the positions that they needed. And I think they have one of the best coaching staffs, and I have nothing but respect for Frank Reich. Look, Michael Pittman Jr. and, you know, guys like Jonathan Taylor, who everyone knows how I feel about Jonathan Taylor, both as a person and as a player. These are young men that are very, very mature and will come in and contribute right away. So I think the Colts, along with what they already have in place, are well on their way. Now, as for Phillip Rivers, look, I got to see him play live this past year, and he is someone who in the past I have done nothing but rave about, as far as in particular his football intellect and his ability to really control things at the line of scrimmage. But when I was down there in Mexico City and watched him against the Kansas City Chiefs and stood there on the sideline with Steve Young watching him, you can see a guy here at 38 years old, who's going to be 39 in December, whose skills are starting to decline. And when you look at some of the real pertinent situational statistics, whether it be tight window throws, plus 20-yard throws, red zone efficiency as far as QBR, he was in the bottom half of the league, and it looked like something where Father Time was starting to catch up on him. I myself am a little bit more skeptical as far as whether or not he can be a multiple-year player at this point, but there's no doubt they have the surrounding cast around him. But I think as far as his performance is concerned, to me it's a wait-and-see type of thing.
I'm with you. I saw it that way as well. If he can recapture some of that magic, as Dan suggests, then it could mean big things in Indy this year. Then we have sneaky big news about a quarterback who was in the same draft as Rivers, and that's Ben Roethlisberger, who has taken the next step in his recovery from elbow surgery. He posted a video of himself throwing passes to teammates and, maybe more importantly, trimming his famous beard. First, here's James Conner on the workouts and Ben's new look.
Yes, we've been at his place, and I've been throwing around. Yeah, he's looking good, man. He got a haircut, too. So, you know, he's looking good throwing the ball, and he's styling now, too. So it's been fun, man. It's been awesome this year. I think we've really grown, you know, as teammates and friends. So he's looking healthy, man. He's fired up. He's anxious to play.
So here's the part of that is sneaky big news. Ben had said he wasn't going to shave the beard till his elbow was healthy enough to be making NFL-caliber throws. So, Lewis Riddick, we'll start with you. If Big Ben is making NFL-caliber throws and really is healthy, what are we looking at in Pittsburgh?
I think in Pittsburgh, what you're looking at is a team that will right away be contending for the AFC North title. Now, obviously, they're going to have to go through Baltimore. But really, if he's healthy and the rest of the guys who they missed last year, namely Juju Smith-Schuster and James Conner, if those guys are healthy, then this football team will be right back in it. They did some fine things in the draft this year as far as adding some speed at running back with Anthony McFarland Jr., drafting Chase Claypool. They signed Eric Ebron, Deontay Johnson from last year from Toledo, one of the best route runners that was in the entire draft in 2019. And then think about it on defense. They can rush the passer as well as anyone. They got a dynamic young linebacker in Devin Bush. You know, at the second level, Minka Fitzpatrick absolutely just lit the NFL on fire at safety. Pittsburgh's right there. It's just a matter of health. And obviously, Greeny, that starts with Ben Roethlisberger. And if he is making NFL caliber throws, as indicated by that haircut, and trust me, he looks good, man. He looks ready to go. But Pittsburgh's going to be right in it, and that's just going to make the AFC North all the more exciting.
What a testament. If you noticed Hembo's little stat down there, what a testament to the coaching and everything else in Pittsburgh that you look at where they were at the very bottom in QBR and still managed to win 8 games. So, Dan, Ben doesn't have to necessarily be back to what he was 10 years ago. If Ben recaptures some portion of that, this could be a very dangerous team.
Well, Greeny, go back 2 years ago. I mean, 2 years ago, he led the NFL in passing. He threw for like 5,100 yards and 34 touchdowns. So Big Ben was playing some of his best football before this elbow injury. And to Lewis's point, all the people that they have added around, one of the great benefits that Big Ben is going to have, again, as an aging quarterback, is he's got a dominant offensive line. That offensive line for Pittsburgh is still very good. And then the pieces that they have, they get the ball to. Now, Pittsburgh has kind of transitioned their offense. They're not pushing the football downfield as much as they used to. It is very much so, Ben, get the ball out of your hands to some of these playmakers on the perimeter and allow those guys to work. But the defensive point is such a big deal because to not have to ask the quarterback week after week after week to have to go score, hey, we need you to score 28 plus points for us to win the football game. There's a little bit of a freedom there for the quarterback and a lack of pressure to have to go out and be perfect all the time, which again, when we're getting into this aging quarterback conversation, it's a really big deal to have good people around them to not demand those guys to have to carry the football team. So if Big Ben comes back healthy, the AFC North is going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, look, it's the legendary quarterback class of 04. Eli is retired, but here are Philip Rivers and Ben Roethlisberger in very interesting situations heading into a season in the AFC. All right, much more football as we go this morning, but we're getting back to LeBron James next. He spoke about Michael Jordan yesterday, revealing an impact that went well beyond the basketball court. You'll hear his very personal thoughts next.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Tomorrow night on ESPN, we relive the final game Michael Jordan ever played for the Bulls. Game 6, the 98 finals. You get behind-the-scenes footage and sounds, along with film angles that are unique from the original TV broadcast. That's tomorrow night, 9 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. Meanwhile, it's been more than 2 months since Rudy Gobert's positive coronavirus test halted the NBA season. Our Brian Windhorst right now has some reflection on what we have missed and on the hope that basketball will bring when it finally does return.
And fans, due to unforeseen circumstances, the game tonight has been postponed.
Breaking news from the NBA, the league has been suspended.
What are we missing with no NBA right now? Maybe the first ever hallway series. Doubling is a battle for LA, both for now and into the future. The LeBron James Kawhi Leonard rivalry is about to get supercharged. Both are trying to become the first ever to win a finals MVP with three different teams. And to be the first to put their name on a banner at Staples.
This dude, Kawhi Leonard, it's my town now.
This is LeBron's window. He was on his way to reclaiming his throne.
There's more, of course. The Greek freak finishing off his case for a second MVP and then chasing the title that so many believe is his destiny.
Antetokounmpo, oh my goodness! He's inhuman!
Just before deciding on whether to extend in Milwaukee. The two South Carolina rookies, Ja Morant and Zion Williamson, staging a duel for the last playoff spot.
Zion!
Zion is amazing, but Ja's so far ahead.
The 76ers, the league's most mind-boggling team, fighting with the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other. Are we missing the breakout for Jason Tatum, who was looking like a budding superstar when the league halted? Or would that be saved for Pascal Siakam and the Raptors as they prepare for a surprise title defense? Or perhaps Nikola Jokic and the dangerous Nuggets, who had plans of ruining the LA party out west? We also left the grand experiment in Houston bubbling. Russell Westbrook and James Harden were trying to make extreme small ball a revolution. So much was lost, so much to look forward to when the NBA comes back.
Really well done. And as Wendy rejoins us here, we were going to talk about that, but then LeBron took care of that for us because he had a lot to say last night on his YouTube channel uninterrupted. And I want to play some of that because as we all watched Last Dance together, and so much of the narrative, Wendy, of course, became LeBron and Michael. Last night, LeBron, interestingly, was not talking about himself versus Michael. He was talking about himself playing with Michael Jordan. Listen to this.
I could care less about how great Mike was and how transcendent he was as a personality, as a person, but just his drive. And I know me personally, the way I play the game, where it comes to like team first, I just feel like, you know, my best assets work perfectly with Mike.
You know, I totally agree, actually. As I read through all of the comments that he made, Wendy, the notion of LeBron James and Michael Jordan on the floor together at the same time would be about as dynamic as anything that we've ever seen.
Yeah, when I saw him talk about this, it just made me smile because that is LeBron James. This is actually a great conversation. It was 40 minutes long with two of the guys who he's friends with. He had let his guard down, and that's when he's at his best. And it made me smile because you get to your core, that's who LeBron believes he is. What he believes the best version of himself is as a teammate. He's not always been the best version of himself. None of us are. But that's what he believes. And when he thinks back to his childhood, falling in love with Michael Jordan, he didn't envision playing him with one-on-one. He envisioned playing the Scottie Pippen role. A lot of LeBron's game was patterned after Scottie Pippen's game. Now, LeBron didn't like the way I framed this. I wrote a story about how, you know, he was more interested in being his teammate than his adversary, and he tweeted about it. He didn't like it. But I really think he was just afraid of being called weak there. I do think at his core, if you know LeBron, he really relishes being lauded as a teammate, something he's been criticized for throughout his career, but something I don't think he truly backs down from.
Look, Michael Jordan was he's the greatest scorer probably ever. LeBron James is not a score-first player. That isn't his instinct. I've said many times, I believe he was put on this earth to be the greatest point guard that ever lived, or in his case, I guess, a point forward. I don't know why it would be deemed a sign of weakness to say LeBron James playing with a guy like Michael Jordan, who was just like the same scorer that LeBron has played with throughout his career at his best, but infinitely better than any of the rest of them. It would be a perfect combination.
Yeah, you know, the thing about it is this LeBron is, his mentality is different than Jordan's. You know, when LeBron has done one documentary about his career. It was about his high school years, and the entire documentary was about him as a teammate with his other four friends in high school. This, this documentary that Michael did was about myth making. Now, it's an incredible story, and we all loved it, and LeBron loved it, and LeBron was fired up to be talking about his hero. But that's just the way the two of them are different. It doesn't necessarily mean that one way is the right way or the other. But I do think LeBron is a little bit sensitive to the idea that that implies weakness. And he certainly will be criticized by other talking heads today for it being weak. But I think he was being honest. And that's all I've ever wanted from him and all we ever want from any of our athletes.
Well, for whatever it's worth, I don't consider it the least bit weak. I think it's the right assessment of two players and how their skill sets would have gone perfectly together. Now, that said, because of LeBron's greatness, because he has transcended any player in his own generation and is now really competing with ghosts on the all-time list, it does then beg the question, how do you think Last Dance airing, particularly as it did during this vacuum where the NBA went away to the side, how do you think it has impacted LeBron's legacy and, if at all, his psyche?
Well, just look at this poll we released yesterday, which had some ridiculous things about it. People thinking that Michael Jordan was a better passer than LeBron and stuff. It has, you know, remade it. You know, if you're of a certain age, you grew up, falling in love with Jordan and then watched LeBron's career. If you're of a certain age, you grew up watching Dr. J and Larry Bird, or you watched Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain. Or if you're a certain age, you never got to see Michael Jordan play. So this really brought him to people who've forgotten or hadn't seen him play. I do think that part of the reason Jordan said yes to this, he said yes to this documentary in the summer in 2016 after LeBron won that title, was because maybe for the first time there was possibly a threat to the throne. And I think that Jordan cares about that. Just like LeBron cares at the end of the day about being known as a great teammate, Jordan cares about being known as the best. And I'm not, that's not saying that LeBron's not competitive and that he doesn't want to be remembered as the best, but the two of them go about things differently. Greeny, who are the people we most compare LeBron to? We compare him to Michael and we compare him to Kobe. And one of the reasons it's ripe for comparison is because of how different he is than them.
100%. He's different from them as far as the way he plays, and he's different from them as far as his personality. He's also the youngest, which I think is significant. It's good for Michael Jordan. I think it's acceptable for Michael Jordan to say, these guys aren't as good as I was. I think it would be viewed very differently if LeBron James were to say, I think I'm better than Michael Jordan was. I think that would be viewed very differently than Jordan trying to suggest he himself is the best.
Yeah, and he did go through a brief period, again, right after he won that 2016 title, where he allowed himself to talk about, hey, I'm chasing this ghost. I want to catch this ghost. But you know what? He's backed off of that, and he has said, my career is complete. Everything else from here is gravy. I do believe that. I do believe it doesn't have to conclude more championships. But there are certain people who will count, and Jordan is one of those people.
Oh, no question. I think there's a lot here. It's well done. Wendy, thanks very much, and thanks for taking that look back for us at what the NBA season has lost. And as we look forward to tonight on ABC, After the Dance is one final look at the 10-episode documentary on the Bulls. Stephen A is your host. He'll talk to a number of special guests, including Shaq, Anthony Anderson of Black-ish, and Good Morning America's Robin Roberts. All that is tonight, 8 Eastern, on ABC. Coming up, what happens if the college football season starts and a player contracts the coronavirus? One very important voice gave you an opinion yesterday. You may be surprised by the answer. You will hear it next.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
We are back on Get Up, and NFL owners will meet virtually today, and they are expected to amend the Rooney Rule to require more interviews of minority candidates for coaching positions. Yesterday, Anthony Lynn and Hugh Jackson weighed in on one of the league's proposals, which would attach draft pick incentives to minority hires.
I think sometimes you can do the wrong thing while trying to do the right thing, if that makes sense at all. So I think that there are a lot of qualified African-American coaches right now that could be a head coach in this league. And I think this is out of desperation. This is something that's, you know, that we're throwing out there.
I believe this is somewhat of a system problem. You can't put a Band-Aid on it and think it will get fixed. I think this is bigger than just the owners. I think this issue is a byproduct of the history of the league, personally.
All right, Diana Rossini, I want to bring you in first here because everyone that we have spoken to here seems to be unanimously non-supportive, if you will, of this proposal. What are you expecting when they vote on this today?
Well, let's just begin with the logistics here. I was just told, actually, this virtual meeting is going to begin at 1 o'clock Eastern today. Again, you're going to need 24 of the 32 owners to vote in favor of this new proposal. And just getting a gauge around the league, talking to minority coaches, assistants, GMs, former coaches as well, it seems that a lot of them are in line with what we just heard Anthony Lynn discuss, which is this isn't good. This feels like a bribery. This is a bad look. And when these coaches, if they were to get hired based on this proposal, it doesn't make them feel like they're qualified for the job. But Greeny, I do want to point out this is a proposal that's going to be voted on today, but something that is going to be implemented starting today in regards to the Rooney Rule. Now, two minority external candidates will need to interview for head coaching jobs and one minority for coordinators. Usually it's one minority for that head coaching. Now it's two. and one minority for coordinator position. So that is a step forward. But in terms of that proposal, we'll know more later this afternoon.
So some changes are on the way, but we'll see what comes from the vote. Diana, thank you. And I want to bring Lewis into the conversation here, because Lewis, this obviously is something I know is very personal to you for a variety of reasons, including the fact that you have recently interviewed for general manager positions. And I would just love to give you the floor here and get your thoughts on all these conversations that you have heard over the last few days.
Yeah, Greeny, I think first and foremost, look, I have spoken about this a lot, but when thinking about how I wanted to kind of frame this discussion this morning, I think irony is the first thing that comes to mind in this sense. You know, it's ironic that owners are voting on something today, on a proposal today that the diversity committee is bringing to the table. They're voting on something that they, in fact, are responsible for. Okay, they're responsible for the hiring or not hiring of minority head coaches and general managers, and yet they're right now voting on whether or not they should incentivize themselves to go ahead and carry through with some of the things that the Rooney Rule was intended to do. That's very ironic to me. I mean, so in essence, you're saying that I myself are, you know, we as owners are voting on something that we just can't in good conscience do on our own just because it's the right thing to do, which is to level the playing field, hire people based on their merit and competency, and then let the best men then, you know, go ahead and compete against one another for the ultimate prize in the NFL, which is winning a Super Bowl. We're not capable of doing that on our own without the diversity committee incentivizing us. That's in essence what this discussion is about. So for anyone like myself who has interviewed for a general manager job, or any coach who has interviewed for a coordinator or head coaching job, that has to strike you as, you know, disappointing, you know, upsetting, disingenuous, all of those things, whatever characterization you want to use. Because look, all of us were, you know, came up in sports and came into the National Football League wanting to advance based off of our merits, based off of our competency. And when you are talking about something like this in terms of incentivizing owners to go ahead and hire people like myself or any minority for that matter, what in essence you are doing is, if in fact we were to get the job, you are undermining our ability to lead and be in a leadership position, because there inevitably are going to be people with inside of that building that you were hired in order to oversee who are going to look at you and say, I don't know if you got this job because of your competency, and therefore you're going to have to come in here and prove to me beyond what anyone else would normally have to prove that you are worthy of this job. And do you really want to put people in that situation? Is that really what you want to have happen in the year 2020 in the National Football League? Now, in my experiences, as far as interviewing for general manager jobs, I have repeatedly and consistently pointed to the fact that when I interviewed for the New York Giants general manager job, I came out of that meeting as a fan of Mr. John Mara, as someone who really respected how he treated me during that entire process, how Steve Tisch treated me during that process. I have known Ernie Accorsi for a long time, who was there in that interview, how he treated me during that process and even prior to me getting that interview. And I felt as though I was given a fair shot. Now, was I disappointed to not get the job? Of course I was. And, you know, and now many people are going to point to the fact, well, he's just, you know, it's just sour grapes. And now he is sitting here and speaking out about this, you know, because right now it's opportunistic for him to do so. No, I never talked negatively about that situation. But the facts of the matter are this, as Anthony Lynn pointed to. You cannot tell me that there aren't people in the scouting community who have interviewed for general manager jobs who are minorities, and people in the coaching community who have interviewed for head coaching jobs. You cannot tell me there aren't more people who are worthy of getting these positions and who, given the right surroundings and the right support, could not succeed. You can't tell me that that's the fact, because if that's the case, if you're telling me that all these people who have interviewed, or all these people who haven't interviewed, who I feel are qualified, if you're telling me that that it's just not true and that these people aren't qualified, then look, I would argue you down, and I would disagree with you vehemently, because there are plenty of candidates who are worthy of these positions. It does need to be a level playing field. This is a discussion that needs to continue to be had, and I hope something is able to come of it by way of the modified Rooney Rule, whereas there are more guys getting exposure to these interviews, and hopefully eventually they are hired, because I think you will see that many of these people, again, given the right surroundings, will succeed.
It's really, really well said, and I think it is clear that this is a problem that needs to be addressed, and that no one feels comfortable with what they have on the table today. Again, the expectation is that it will not be voted through. A little later this morning, Lewis, maybe we can talk about other ways we can try and address this problem. It's really well said. Thank you, Lewis, for sharing those thoughts here.
You bet.
I want to get to some college football news this morning, because there's something very interesting that was said yesterday. College football, while they're trying to figure out if and when and how they can play this fall. The president of West Virginia is Dr. Gordon Gee. He was on Paul Feinbaum's show yesterday, and he expressed why he feels college football should not shut down due to a positive COVID-19 test. Here's what he said.
I think that we're learning how to control it. And one thing is we need to get over panic. You know, we just need to be calm about this thing. It is here. It's going to deal with it. But, you know, if one of our athletes, for example, we're talking on about football right now, if one of our athletes gets a coronavirus, we can't just shut the whole thing down. We've got to figure out how to control that part of what we're doing. Someone's going to come down with coronavirus. I mean, let's just be clear about it. So the question is, how do we handle that? Do we have isolation rooms? Do we put them into quarantine? A number of things like that. Then the final thing in terms of college football is how do we make certain that both our own team and the visiting teams are given all the opportunity to protect themselves from the virus, but also to be able to play the game in a safe environment.
And Dr. Gordon Gee is a guy who's been around a long time. For those who don't know, he was the president of Ohio State. He's been around the sport and the industry for forever. And here are Paul and Laura with us here this morning. And Laura, I'll start with you because I feel like I've heard you ask this question of so many coaches and others. It's interesting to hear someone willing to come out and say, if someone on the team tests positive for coronavirus, we still cannot stop everything down. That feels very important to me.
Yeah, and Greeny, there's been a shift over the last maybe couple of weeks, maybe a little longer than that, where some of the decision makers in college football have said exactly what you heard Gee say just there, that they know that it's inevitable that somebody will test positive for coronavirus. And so how do they handle that? And those are things that are being discussed daily, and there are differing opinions across the country, as you might imagine. But I've spoken to a few lately who have said that they really would take a model similar to what they do when a player gets the flu. And let me be clear here. No one's saying that coronavirus is just like the flu. There are obviously differences there, and they're taking the severity into consideration. But they would isolate players as a result of them testing positive and then going from there. And it's interesting because we've had a lot of people weigh in on this. How do you mandate social distancing for these young men? You really can't do that. And that's where they know that this is inevitable to happen, and it's a matter of controlling it. One person said to me yesterday, though, and I think this is really key, what if the entire team or most of the team gets infected, an entire coaching staff? They don't have a good plan for exactly how they would handle that. That's something that is actively being discussed and is a real problem that we could be facing.
Paul, what do you think?
I think what President Gee said is the most significant moment of the push to get college football back, because until now, all we've heard is, well, what if? And the feeling, Greeny, was that the whole thing would get shut down like we saw back in March. What Gee is saying is we can't be fearful. And I've heard that from coaches. I know Laura has expressed that as well. And it's extremely important. Yes, you have to have a plan, but the season doesn't begin for another 3 months. And I think they will have a plan, but the biggest plan they have to have is what happens if. And if they can implement that, then I think we're going to have college football, and we're going to have it in a big way.
And for those who weren't watching last week, Laura, I just have a moment here, but you've spoken to a lot of players, and these players understand those possibilities, and everyone you've spoken to continues to say they would want to play?
They would. And I'm talking about even some of the top players in college football. And one thing, too, that I was speaking with somebody about a couple days ago is that they can't also tell these players that they can't see their families. So we are talking about a situation where, you know, they can try and suggest social distancing. They can try and suggest some of this to hopefully prevent spread of potential viruses. But they can't implement, you know, hey, you can't go see your family at all. So that's a big piece of this as well.
Yes, it gets awfully tricky when you're not allowed to call them employees. Anyway, we have set aside a bigger chunk of time to get more into this in our next hour, because there's a lot here, guys. Thank you very much. I also mentioned terrific guest coming up tomorrow morning. Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh will join us 9:30 Eastern. We'll talk about how college football can return. He's got a lot of ideas. You know, Jim, always fascinating. He'll be live with us tomorrow morning here on Get Up. Meanwhile, coming up, talk about a dream team. LeBron talking about playing with Michael Jordan. Why he says it would have been great, and what we think on the way. Get Up on ESPN.